Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 11 of season 2. When you hear people talk about local food and food security, does the picture in your head include fish? Are they in that basket of local food along with all of those other terrestrial products that we eat? Or is fish somehow in a slightly different category? Is it a coincidence that a major union in the province, the FFAW, is the Fish, Food and Allied Workers Union? Is fish not food as well? At the federal level, fisheries and agriculture are in separate departments. At the provincial level, they're in the same department but in very separate divisions with virtually no crossover. Why don't we have just one basket of food? One that includes figgy duff and fat back and fiddleheads, as well as fish.
Small-scale fisheries is probably just a little bit over 50% of fishing that actually occurs. We're at a real crossroads here where we're talking about how are we going to feed 10 billion people in ways that are sustainable. Relationships between the people who harvest and gather the food and the people who eat the food, those are really valuable relationships to the community. Not being able to sell seal pelt once seal was harvested for food reduced the economy of Inuit people so that they had trouble getting their own food.
Today's guest has a passion to celebrate the province's fishery. Kimberly Oren has a mission to educate the public about the fishery of the past and the present, to help us imagine a fishery of the future, to get folks to take stock of the value of fish and the tradition of fishing, not only as nutrition, but also as a way of life, as a culture, as an historic and powerful nurturer of community. She's a fisher, educator, community organizer, and all-round social entrepreneur. In April 2021, I caught up with her at her home in Petty Harbor on Zoom. With the aid of a slightly dicey internet connection, it was likely mine. It was on a particularly important day for fish, at least in Newfoundland and Labrador.
It's awfully interesting that we're chatting on Good Friday, which is...
I know, I saw that and I was like, oh, of course we would talk about fish on Good Friday.
Are you having fish today?
Leo and I were joking about that last night because I think we sort of, I don't know how we forgot it was Good Friday, but we're having lamb.
Well, you probably have fish more days of the year than most people anyways, so...
Probably eat fish 3 times a week, even when we're not fishing. And then when it's the fishing season, we eat fish almost every day, so...
How is the season this year with COVID?
It depends on which species you're talking about, right? I mean, snow crab is definitely the export species that you're sending away for restaurants and cruise ships and resorts and all of that. Yeah. And those things have been shut down with COVID. So what do you do with the snow crab? And so then the government had all of the grant opportunities for processors to purchase big freezers so that they literally could store this food, which is more of a commodity than anything else, and then wait for the market to pick back up again so that they could sell their crab. So I imagine last year's crab is probably still mostly in freezers.
Sounds like all the millions of pounds of butter we have stuck somewhere.
Because you gotta have something to dip your snow crab in.
That's true. I've read that a large percentage of the fish people eat in North America is eaten in restaurants because they don't cook at home very much. Is that part of what you're talking about here?
That is part of what I'm talking about, yeah. Especially fish that are not cultural foods. There are some species that are considered cultural foods because they're species that if you look up throughout history, they were found closer to shore. They're not deep water species. And so those fish have been traditionally fished. Those there was still somewhat of a market for.
So a cultural food, would that be like codfish?
Yes.
Herring?
Yes. Yeah.
So is there a chance that there'll be really inexpensive snow crab this year because their freezers are already full?
You know, it looks like they're saying that the price of snow crab is supposed to be up this year, which I was surprised to see.
How about the food fishery this year? Was that affected by the pandemic?
There were more people out participating in the food fishery this year because we were all starved to get outside, you know,
right.
Being cooped up in our houses, you know, between the double whammy, especially here on the east coast of Newfoundland and Labrador, between the snowmageddon and then closely followed by the first COVID lockdown and then more COVID lockdowns. And, you know, we tended to stay inside more during those lockdowns than go outside. And so once we go outside, it was just like, go do whatever we can. It was challenging to find personal flotation devices. It was, boat sales were up. Kayak sales were up. You know, every kind of outdoor equipment you could think about, the sales were up. Yeah, everything. We're getting outside. We've got kind of an interesting dual thing going on. We're trapped inside because we're doing online learning for schools, even our children. And then we're at home doing online work. And so we're much more in front of the screen than ever before. And because of that, we are trying to experience outdoors as much as possible than we ever did before. And we're buying all kinds of cool outdoor equipment and going out on the trails. And so it's really exciting. But just a reminder to people, like, you don't have to spend money on cool stuff. You just got to get your coat and your jacket and hat and shoes and go on outside and just walk around your yard and get some sun on your face and get the smell of house off you.
Get the smell of the house off of you. I love that. Kimberly Oren has been an engine behind a number of initiatives. I've lost track. And most of them seem to have three words, one of which is fish. Like Girls Who Fish, Fish in Schools, Fish for Fridays, Fish as Food, and her major entity, Fishing for Success. The latter is also a tourism operation, and tourism funds many of these other projects. I asked her about the effects of COVID on these activities.
So I'm co-founder and volunteer executive director of Fishing for Success, which is a nonprofit social enterprise that works to transmit the intangible cultural heritage of the small-scale fishery of Newfoundland and Labrador. And we depend on the revenue stream from our tourism experiences to fund our community programming. So yeah, this year it's been a little challenging. Our revenue is down 80%-ish, but it is what it is. We're here. We're stubborn. We had some great experiences with picking up our community programming that involved, of course, Fish as Food. We started the Fish for Friday project this time last year with the first COVID lockdown that started during Good Friday last year and joined in to help the Stone Soup project that is a whole big conglomeration of all kinds of other community organizations that were already working together and had formed during Snowmageddon to deliver food to people living in downtown St. John's. And so they had a prepared program that they were doing 5 days a week. And we said, well, how about we help out with Fish on Friday? And so it was a perfect fit for us to, you know, reintroduce folks to the idea of eating more local fish. It also helped local fish plants that were having trouble moving some of their fish product that they still had. And the project that the community groups were working on also was helping to employ restaurant employees that needed employment before this federal programming kicked in, and restaurants were preparing the meals. And our volunteers got so much out of it. When we added in on the Good Friday, we added in the elders from Petty Harbor who were living by themselves, and the First Light Indigenous elders who were living in First Light community. And when we would bring the meals to them, they were waiting by their door. It was, you know, the highlight of their week. And so it may have made their week, but I'll tell you, it made our volunteers really thrilled to be able to participate in the work that they were doing too. We're failing in what's called the economy of care. And so, you know, that's one thing that I think we need to start addressing, is looking at measuring our economy, not by how well the richest people are doing, but how well the least among us are doing. Because, you know, that old saying about a chain is only as strong as the weakest link. And that's always true. Later in the Fish for Friday project, when we actually, during the fishing season, we had access to fresh fish through a second harvest project. We were actually purchasing fresh fish directly from fish harvesters in Petty Harbor and moving it into downtown St. John's. And we brought that fish to Choices for Youth. And then we actually brought it to Bridges to Hope Food Bank. And it went over really well with the older community, because they can't get their hands on fresh fish. And it was really kind of a neat coincidence, because at the time, Bridges to Hope had just received a whole bunch of salt pork scrunchions. And they were like, what are we going to do with all this? And then I happened to call and say, can you take fresh fish? And they were like, oh, we got salt pork. So it's almost as if things are meant to be. It's always a happy thing when all of that works together.
You talked about as well called Fish as Food as a program. What was that program about?
Well, see, I use that phrase because so often when you hear on the news about the fishing industry, or you read it in the paper, they talk about price per pound. And, you know, the other day some politicians were tweeting out about how the cost of snow crab looks like it's going to be high this year. And so that's going to bring in, I don't know what number they mentioned, into the Newfoundland and Labrador economy. And so, like, this focus on fish as a commodity, on bringing in X dollars, like, we're losing the focus on fish as an animal, on fish as food. It's losing sight on, you know, what it means to go out and harvest fish and bring it back to the community as, you know, a livelihood for your family, on, you know, feeding a community. We're losing sight of that because, you know, so often the focus is on get it in, export it, get it in, export it, get it in, export it. And it's frustrating because we're still bringing in anywhere between 80 to 90% of our own food we're bringing in, but yet we're taking seafood and shipping it out. So just encouraging people to eat more seafood that's locally caught here in Newfoundland and Labrador, and raising your voice about how important it is to have access to local seafood is extremely important, especially as we move forward so that we become more food secure in our own ability to supply our own families.
Do you have any piece of music?
Maybe draw some attention to capelin. Capelin is such a delicious little fish, and we forget about that when it rolls in. During the summer, we go down to the beaches for the party and put in the fire, but we forget we can eat that little fellow.
It was in the month of June upon a Saturday afternoon, when my wife, she called out to me without warning. She said, "Peck Quinlan, he just phoned you, looking for the twine he loaned you. Go haul your capelin trap tomorrow morning." So 'twas take her off to collars for to make some extra dollars. I'm sure all hands agreed that that's quite charming. So with twine and rope and grapelin, we will catch the spawny capelin to feed the Japanese on Sunday morning. 'Twas Loyola, Brendan, Larry, Ernan, Mose, and Tom, and Gary, all hands rushing in to bite, no time for yarning. There was Skipper Billy Pryor, scrabbling like a man of fire, just to be the first one in on Sunday morning. 'Twas Cliff and Robert Barter, 'twas a more than to starter, then go in around London's Point and head or northern. For the trap it lies in Swile Cove, and Cliff says to Bob, "Now by Jove, we'll put capelin to the ringboat Sunday morning." 'Twas Fabian and Ronnie, Edmund Noon and brother Tommy, all in skipping in the capelin boys, they're swarming. Then Simlocker turns to Johnny, says, "Why, most of them are spawny. We'll get 20 cents a pound on Sunday morning." Now we all thought we had less work, so we brought them to the breastwork. Then Ambrose called him out with all his learning. He said, "With undersized and red feet, boys, they're full of stuff we don't need. You'll get 2 cents a pound on Sunday morning. So don't make it a habit to go fishing on a Sabbath, 'cause the man above will take you without warning. And when you were 6 feet under, it's too late to know you blundered. You should have gone to Mass on Sunday morning. Yes, you should have gone to Mass on Sunday morning."
That's Jenny Gannock with Capelin on a Sunday, a cautionary tale of sorts. Let's head back to our conversation now with Kimberly Oren of Fishing for Success.
In many discussions, you've been very good at reminding us, when we talk about food in general, like with the capital F, reminding us that sometimes marine resources aren't always included when we talk about food security or food sovereignty and so on. Is that changing at all? Is it getting any easier to be a prophet, always having to say, "Well, there's also fish"?
What about fish? Look at policy council that was just established. Canadian Food Policy Advisory Council. I didn't see anybody on there that had a connection to fish or fishing. It's a Canadian food policy. It's going to be making policy for the east coast of Canada and for the west coast of Canada and our coastal communities in the north, which are extremely even more dependent upon protein from the sea. Yeah, so what about fish? You know, it's really frustrating because fisheries is really important. Look at the CETA discussions. Fish were right up there. And then you look at Brexit. What was the last hanger on about Brexit? is fish, and he went to leave out fishing. I don't understand it. And the other thing about fishing is that control of your oceans really leads into national security. And who's on your oceans the most often? It's your fish harvesters. And so it seems to me that, you know, that's a little piece of a puzzle in controlling not just the food security of your country, but also the national security of your country. You know, they're going to be the first ones out there who might see something going on. I just don't understand why we constantly leave fishing out. It's often the last thing that's holding up many of these international agreements.
When we were chatting earlier once, you mentioned something about Fish in Schools program. Is that part of the many programs that you folks are doing?
So we've been trying to get fish into schools. And, you know, we have like little green thumbs and agriculture in the classrooms, and we have, you know, gardens in schools. And, you know, again, we're not doing anything about introducing kids to fishing or fish. And it's not the idea that, you know, we need kids to grow up to fish for a living. We do need some people to grow up to fish for a living, because the average age of our fish harvesters is just about 60, so we're going to need some of them sometime. But the great thing about fishing, though, is that it introduces young people to so many other careers, too, because you interact with so many other subjects while you're out fishing that it can inspire your interest in so many other things. You know, you've got to think about meteorology, you've got to think about oceanography, you're thinking about marine biology, you're thinking about how to engineer a boat. So you're touching on all kinds of other different things. And it's just really cool to be out there. And it can really tap into self-healing, both mentally and physically, and can be meaningful in those ways too. So leaving kids out of this is a terrible thing. We need to get kids out there before age 9. The research tells us that kids start making big decisions about career choices before the age of 9. And so getting kids there sooner is better. Newfoundland is surrounded by water. Labrador has a huge coastline. And so if we're talking about being a gateway to the Arctic, that is the best way to encourage them to stay here in Newfoundland and Labrador, is to provide them with the opportunity for a future that engages them in some kind of industry or career or future connected to the water.
Does this include having fish as part of their lunches?
Definitely. There's programming in the United States that does that. The UN has been encouraging getting fish into schools for children. I know the issue about food allergy to fish comes up, and it's a discussion that needs to be had. Children have food allergies to all kinds of other foods. One of the most common food allergies is milk, but we don't ban milk from school lunches. So let's have the discussion about fish in schools.
I think if there were regularly fish on the menu in schools, I might want to go back.
I would. I know. Cod especially is just this wonderful, white, mild flavored fish that just takes on the flavor of anything that you want to add to it.
Do you have plans for this summer? Are you continuing to pivot, as most people are, and trying to figure out how do you do what you do in terms of your mission around the fishery?
So we were open last summer and had programming, and we're opening again this summer and we'll have programming, and we do all the COVID protocols where we wear masks and we have hand sanitizer everywhere. And all of our fishing trips were only private anyway, so that part didn't change. And we'll be open this summer. We'll be having fishing excursions, and as long as DFO, of course, follows the dates for the food fishery, we'll be taking people out fishing and teaching them to fillet and encouraging them to create a painting of their first fish and take home their bags of food and all those kinds of things. If you are a landlubber and don't want to go in the boat, we can teach net knitting and rope weaving and dory corking.
Right there in Petty Harbor.
Right here in Petty Harbor.
One of the things that happened was a lot more concern around food security. Are you optimistic?
It's worse. Food prices have increased, and with employment being more precarious than it was pre-COVID, the food security is definitely more insecure. And my concern, especially from the viewpoint of fishing, is that it lacks sovereignty too. There's a lack of control over the fish that's harvested here. Individual fish harvesters themselves have very little control over how they can sell their catch or who they can sell it to or where they can sell it to, but yet farmers have more control over what they can do with their produce, where they can sell it, who they can sell it to. Relationships between the people who harvest and gather the food and the people who eat the food, those are really valuable relationships in the community. And I think that we need to talk about how to strengthen those instead of how to put more people in the middle of them. Fish harvesters are now able to sell 5 species from the wharf. They're not able to process it except for some very limited specific ways. You know, and while you can find local fish at grocery stores and seafood shops, I think that being able to buy directly from the food makers are important also.
Was a tune called Du Pain, Du Beurre et Du Caplin, Bread and Butter and Caplin, a fine lunch in any language. In this last segment of our chat, Kimberly Oren is telling me about a recent Netflix documentary called Seaspiracy. Note that she put air quotes around documentary.
It's unfortunate in Seaspiracy that the only kind of fishing they show is illegal, unreported, uninspected, high seas, industrial, dragger fishing. And we all know the damage that that fishing does. And so they condemn fishing because of that. And they show you all of this terrible stuff. But there's no mention of small-scale fishing, Aboriginal fishing, you know, that supports communities and families and livelihoods and feeds local people, using low-impact gear. We don't mention any of that. And then they just come to this conclusion of don't eat fish. To me, it's an attack on the culture of people who eat fish, and it's very concerning.
Yeah, like in terrestrial agriculture, there are a wide variety of ways to get carrots to grow, but nobody says, oh, because I've taken this video of some carrot farm that I don't like,
don't eat carrots.
But you've been quite involved with the concern that small-scale fisheries have interests that are different than maybe larger-scale fisheries, or but they're ignored. Is it fair to say that's a movement?
Yes, it is a movement. We're taking over.
Watch out.
Small-scale fisheries is probably just a little bit over 50% of the fishing that actually occurs, and it is more sustainable, and I mean that in a way that I can define that, in that it uses lower impact gear. It's less likely to damage the habitat. It is more selective, in that you're more likely to get the fish you want to eat and not fish that you're going to kill and not eat. It fishes closer to shore. It feeds local people. It's a livelihood for local people. And so if you look at some of the work that Polly has done in describing what small-scale fisheries mean, which is boats under 15 meters, we look at that kind of definition. Those boats use less fuel and get more food versus boats that are much bigger. And so all of those things taken into consideration are really important in our food production, right? Less fuel, more food, more employment, and less damage to the environment, the amount of food that we get back. All of that is an important thing to consider. And the fact that this film just comes out and shows you the bad type of fishing and then comes to the conclusion, don't eat fish. Yeah, it's terrible because as we go further north, many cultures there are entirely dependent upon protein from the sea. Just to condemn the cultures that are dependent on protein from the sea in that film like that, that's a judgment that shouldn't be made. And it was made in the past about seal, and you see what happened, and seal products are banned around the world, and it decimated Inuit culture, and not being able to sell seal pelt once seal was harvested for food reduced, you know, the economy of Inuit people so that they had trouble getting their own food. And sure, true, UN backpedaled and said, oh, well, seal products that are produced by Inuit aren't banned. But when you put that little caveat out in there, it's done like dinner. So this seaspiracy concerns me because I'm afraid that this is the beginning of another back on the culture of eating fish. I mean, we do have to recognize that there are better ways of getting our food than others. Mm-hmm. We do have to have that very serious, real conversation. But we also have to recognize that people who are in the situation of working at the ways that aren't the best ways, they need real financial help in getting out of those ways that aren't the good ways, you know? Because once you're committed and you bought the boat and bought the gear, like, you've got this investment now that how can you backpedal out of it? So they need not just policy support to change over the better way. They, you know, they need economic support to switch over. You know, and it's one of those things where as society learns what is better to do, then we should act together to help one another and not take on this holier than thou kind of thing, you know.
One of the big issues is also on aquaculture. Where do you come down on that?
Open pen in the sea, not such a good idea.
Is there a future there?
Yeah, I mean, you could do it up on land and you can control the waste that the animals are producing, and you can think about, well, how are you feeding them? Where is that feed coming from? And then, you know, anytime you get animals in a pen and there's so many of them packed together that now you have to be concerned about the diseases they're passing around. And this, you know, this goes back to farmers and ranchers have the same kind of concern. Like, I can't pack animals in that closely. They're passing around diseases now. So we're at a real crossroads here where we're talking about how are we going to feed 10 billion people in ways that are sustainable for the planet, for the animals, for us. And all of these waste products coming off of whether it's agriculture or aquaculture, they have very real effects, and got to seriously sit down and rejig it all and not be accusatory on one system or the other. We've just got to sit down and look at the science now, because there's enough science out there and there's enough research out there to know what we should be doing and what we can do differently.
Yeah, definitely. We could talk about adjusting our diet, but again, we've got to be aware of where that food is coming from. You know, I just really promote eating local, where you live, close to home, know the people who grow your food, know the people who capture and catch your food for you, and just try to eat close to home.
It's great to chat with you and see that things are still unfolding in spite of whatever is happening, but that the issues around the fishery are still with us.
Always enjoy talking to you.
Take care.
Take care, Ivan. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Some late medieval nautical charts had a practice of warning navigators away from areas that were not well known or were potentially dangerous. They used an illustration of a dragon or a sea monster and the Latin phrase "Hic sunt draconis," or "Here be dragons," in English. Can the same be said for the discussion of the fisheries these days? There are many interest groups and self-appointed experts who line up for their turn at spinning their interpretations. That may be where the real dragons are in the oceans these days. But thankfully, there are still people who bravely sail forth in exploring the issues and who make their views known, like our guests today.
Control of your oceans really leads into national security. And who's on your oceans? It's your fish harvesters. Anywhere between 80 to 90% of our own food we're bringing in, but yet we're taking seafood and shipping it out. To me, it's an attack on the culture of people who eat fish. the best way to encourage them to stay here in Newfoundland and Labrador is to provide them with the opportunity for a future that engages them in some kind of industry or career or future connected to the water. There were more people out participating in the food fishery this year because we were all starved to get outside.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland and Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Capelin on a Sunday by Shannon Ganock and a tune from Saint-Pierre, Du Pain, Du Boire et Du Capelin, played by Christina Smith and Jean Hewson. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by John Ashby. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Yeah, so what about fish?